morning, everybody. We're here this morning to hear and be inspired again, but we're also here this morning to acknowledge and honor one of our members who passed away this summer, Joan Russell. I've had the pleasure of working with Joan for over 15 years. I met her at ETC. And over those 15 years, we planned many, many trips together. Trips to Cuba, Iran, Oman, Libya. Joan was not scared. She believed passionately that travelers were ambassadors who could play as much a role in shaping opinions and forming policy as politicians. For years, for the World Affairs Council of Philadelphia, she offered an Inside Washington program. And that was offered to all of the members of the World Affairs Council around the United States. And this became a kind of flagship, behind-the-scenes program where participants could engage with all kinds of players from journalists to ambassadors. For sure, Joan had her political opinions, which we shared over many a glass of wine. But she cared deeply about showing the whole picture and wanted more than anything for people to engage honestly and openly. She saw travel as a way to connect people and took great pleasure at the end of a successful program in reviewing the achievements and connections that she had forged. She did not tolerate injustice or ignorance, and when she saw it, she would speak her mind loudly and clearly to whomever happened to be there. It was not always pretty, but it was heartfelt, and many, including myself, grew and flourished because of it. I feel blessed to have shared so many adventures with her and would like to honor her courage, her vision, her bravery, and her spirit. And today, to receive our recognition of Joan, we are so thrilled to have with her Michael Russell, her husband. And it's incredible, in our ETC community, we all meet each other, but we rarely meet the families that are behind the people who are so much part of our lives. So, Michael Russell, please come and join us. And we have... Thank you. Thank you, Joan Russell. May your spirit continue to exist here in our community. Thank you.
I just want to say thank you for this. Just like you, Joni's avocation and passion became her profession. And just like you, she sent many people, thousands of people, on journeys of discovery and journeys of self-discovery. And at her memorial service, Craig Snyder of the World Affairs Council reminded us of a quote that's often attributed to St. Augustine: "The world is a book, and those that don't travel only read one page." Thank you.
Thank you very much, Janet, Michael, and of course, Joan. My name is Andrew Lockwood. I'm the president of Pacific Islands Institute, and I'm here to introduce today's session. Sandy Edwards is here today to speak about something Joan did so very well: linking travel with engagement and giving, with engagement being the key word. Throughout the year, our community has stressed this need for greater and more meaningful engagement with their constituency. This bold talk will address how to make your program a linchpin for member engagement. At this time, I'd like to recognize and thank our session sponsor, the Israel Ministry of Tourism, and invite Jill Daly to say a few words.
Good morning. I'm really excited to be here. This is one conference that I really so enjoy. To have the opportunity to spend time with people that so love travel and have a passion for travel. Those of you that are here, how many have been to Israel before? So we have a good sized group, but there's a good sized group that needs to come. Last year, 2017, was record-breaking tourism for Israel. We had 23% increase over any other year of tourism. and we are just short in the U.S. of hitting the million tourist mark coming to Israel from the U.S. So we really invite you to learn more about it. Visit us at our booth. We're booth number 10. We'd love to speak to you a little bit more, but I also want to introduce, we have a guide with us. We're very lucky to have Amir Orly. I'd like to invite him to come up. He's going to just say a couple words. But we are so lucky to have him because his knowledge and what he knows of Israel and his passion really speaks in the words. So I'm going to introduce Amir.
Thank you. Well, this came as a surprise to me. I did not know that I was going to speak until like 2 minutes ago. And they gave me 5 minutes, so I am counting down the minute. And when it goes beep, 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 I'm stepping off the podium. First of all, thank you for inviting me, and this is really a great opportunity. I want to tell you a little bit about my experience with ETC before I'll tell you a little bit more about Israel. About 10 years ago, I think, I led by sheer coincidence. I had no knowledge of ETC, but by sheer coincidence, a fam trip of some travel planners that still, by the way, some of them are here today, Rob and Trarity and Abby and Michelle, and probably I forgot somebody, but there were about 10 of them, plus Mara and Sherry, that came at the time. And this is where, for the first time, I heard about ETC, and we did that trip for a week to 10 days or something like this. And what happened in that tour is that we became a family. And this is 10 years later, and I'm still best friends with some of those. And this is just, you know, something that happens very uniquely when, you know, your heart is exactly at the place where it's supposed to be. And this little group of travel planners materialized, I think, 6 or 7 or even more alumni tour to Israel. And I think everyone that was there once will come back and say this was a life-changing experience. And I spoke yesterday, maybe some of you have heard me before, that Israel has a bad reputation about being a place that is not so safe, which is a complete misleading of reading the news. Israel is as safe as any other country in the world. Of course, things happen there, but where doesn't it? And when you walk the streets of Tel Aviv or Jerusalem or any other city in Israel at night, you feel absolutely fine. So this concept of Israel being an unsafe place is taking away of the potential tourists that otherwise would come. And this is probably a challenge, the biggest challenge that we need to convey. The second challenge is that people think, well, what will I see there? If I go to Alaska, I can see whales. What would I see in Israel? What's there? I'm not that religious, so I don't care so much about the Bible, about that. It's a place of conflict, so, you know, why would I want to put myself in a place of conflict and all this? So it's interesting because Israel is, I spoke yesterday, and some of you might have heard me, is like a little museum of planet Earth. And we have miniatures of everything that is in the world in big. Climates and geography and landscapes and history and religion, and it's all around the corner. Israel is so tiny that you can drive across in 2 hours, and in these 2 hours you can go through 5 different climate zones. So you know, they sometimes tell you that size doesn't matter. It's a lie. It does matter. And the smaller the country is, the better it is for tourists, for traveler, to enjoy it, because you don't need to travel for 2 or 3 days from a desert to an alpine area. You drive for an hour, and you're at a ski resort up in the north, and an hour later you can swim in a freshwater lake that some people have heard about because Jesus walked on its water. It's called Sea of Galilee. So this diversity and the fact that Israel is the only country on earth that is touching 3 continents and literally is not a part of neither of them. It is connected to Africa in the south, to Asia in the east, and to Europe in the north. So all these climates and all these landscapes kind of like attract the fauna and flora from all over the world. Not to talk about the meeting point for instance, bird migrations. I spoke to Jim from England the other day, and he told me that he led with the British Society, Birding Society. He led a bird watching tours to Israel. You can see in an area of 10 square kilometers, like 7 miles, 7 miles, more species of birds in 1 year that you would see in England in a lifetime. And so people who are interested in nature, you have the fauna, the flora, the climate, it's all over there. Not to talk, of course, about history, when, you know, this was the junction of the world. People from east and from west and from north and from south, all as they walked at the time before, so thank you very much for listening. Come to Israel, we love you very much.
Thank you, Jill and Amir. I guess 5 minutes isn't enough to describe a country, huh? There you go. Sandra Kaiser Edwards is the Deputy Director of Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art, located in Bentonville, Arkansas. She has held this position since 2007 and played a vital role in the conception, planning, building, and opening of the museum, including being instrumental in the establishment of endowments for the museum's operations, acquisitions, and capital improvements. Prior to Crystal Bridges, Ms. Edwards and her late husband Clay served for 9 years as the management team for the University of Arkansas Development Program, directing the campaign for the 21st century. Sandy also served as Director of Development for Outreach and Cooperative Extension at Penn State University and has been recognized nationally for her work in major concert promotion and performing arts. An advocate of access to quality education, Ms. Edwards served as trustee of the board of her alma mater, Lenore Ryan College, received Penn State's Outreach Pioneer Award for distance education, was named honorary alumna of the University of Arkansas, and received an honorary doctorate in humane letters and a Distinguished Alumna Award from Western Illinois University, where she received a master's degree. Sandy's career can be summed up as focusing on engagement and relationship building with an emphasis on what people want to see, hear, and feel, and on providing opportunities for growth and meaningful engagement for donors and members of communities outside major urban centers. Without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, Sandy Edwards.
Good morning. Thank you, Andrew. I'm still thinking about that little museum of planet Earth. I think you've got a terrific elevator speech. Thank you for that. This fall, I was speaking to alumni directors of the Southeastern Conference in the U.S. For those of you who don't know U.S. football or sports, we translate these athletic conferences into academic. There we go. Just saw Vanderbilt. And yeah. So we were all together talking about the changing landscape of alumni involvement when one of the attendees thought the topic might be of interest to ETC. We ended up having a very stimulating conversation about how creating active, relevant engagement is a universal strategy for nonprofits reliant upon major gift support. So that would actually mean every nonprofit. Crystal Bridges is one of America's newest museums, a little more than 6 years old, having opened on the auspicious date of 11/11/11. I have the unique perspective of having been with the organization from the beginning, focused on building a building, building a collection, and building an organization simultaneously. For you who are drawn to building and managing new organizations, you understand that when I say it was a thrilling time, it was a once-in-a-lifetime experience. Of course, over my career, I have focused primarily on the creation of either new organizations or reorganizations in the arts and education, and this by far has been the most robust, and I would say the one with the highest stakes. With Crystal Bridges, I have had the remarkable opportunity to be a part of a team effort that has quite frankly defied conventional wisdom at every turn. When the museum was publicly announced, the art world, the museum field, and just about everyone with an opinion outside of the state of Arkansas was abuzz with speculation that there was simply no room for another American art museum in our country, and that its location, affectionately referred to as flyover country, would never draw more than a regional crowd. This startup of 6 years now ranks number 25 in the most attended art museums in North America, averaging about 625,000 people a year. We have been called a disruptor, which is a good thing. We've been called an innovator, which is a very good thing, and progressive. All because we did something radical. We welcomed all, everyone. We encouraged everyone to come, and we have put our focus on the guest experience. And we learned that if you focus on taking care of the guest, everything else will fall into place. If you take care of your alumni and the members of your organization, everything else will fall into place. In 2013, we at Crystal Bridges launched our travel program with an adventure to Paris, where we were premiering an exhibition at the Louvre entitled American Encounters, which was organized by Crystal Bridges, the Louvre, the High Museum in Atlanta, and the Terra Foundation. In retrospect, we could have chosen a less complicated and ambitious first program, but we learned that an earnest effort, combined with the excitement of new patrons who felt that they were every bit the ambassadors of our museum, went a long way in creating what I would end up referring to as the first pancake. It may not be pretty, but it tastes pretty good and ends up wanting more. So most importantly, it gave us a strong sense of what would develop into our travel program culture. The value for our major donor patrons on this trip was learning about the world of art through an informed perspective, but one at every turn that reinforced validation of their opinion about art. They were not on the trip to simply learn the canon of art history. They were to experience art through their own personal lens. Their opinion was sought, it was expressed, and at every turn we validated that opinion. So many of these first-time art patrons have continued traveling with us and are now building their own collections of art that appeals to them first and foremost. But before going forward, I admit to an odd sensation of not being accompanied today by a PowerPoint that displays the glorious images of Crystal Bridges, a Moshe Safdie design complex nestled in 120 acres of Ozark woodlands that personifies the intersection of art and nature. Museums, after all, are about visual acuity and the seductive practice of allowing the art to speak for itself. It was a conscious decision on my part, however, to step away from the visual images as we come together this morning in a creative thinking mode focused on concepts that will launch thoughtful discussion throughout the days ahead, and I look forward to this being a launch of those conversations. That said, I hope you will consider Crystal Bridges as a cultural destination for your U.S.-focused trips. I promise that we will make your planning very easy and that it will be a memorable experience. Each of your organizations invest a great deal of time and energy in making memorable experiences that hopefully connect your most valued relationships more deeply to your mission. There is little question of the value of your major donors. They are, quite simply, the foundation of your past and certainly the strength of this present time of your organization and the possibility of a brighter and more promising future. I believe it is in this hope-filled spirit that we have made travel programs a priority, knowing that on each trip there will be opportunities for in-depth conversations and once-in-a-lifetime experiences that are bonding in ways that simply cannot be planned, but are teed up for serendipity. And I am convinced that you cannot be in this business of travel without believing in serendipity. It is our secret sauce, as I like to call it. The guaranteed part of any travel program, however, is the luxury of being together in a unique environment and enjoying daily life for a few days in an entirely new way. We all work from the positivity of this framework, don't we? And then we add the people, not just our guests, alumni, members, trustees, but ourselves and a myriad of others upon whom we are reliant to produce at undeniably high standards. Within all these moving parts that you must juggle, we must focus on two precious commodities, trust and time. And we have to prove two things: value and relevancy. Our major donors and major donor prospects are globally minded, well-traveled, and technologically networked to people and resources everywhere. Many of your institutions prepared them to be leaders in their fields, leaders in their businesses, and dedicated contributors to their community and to our society. You have nurtured their intellectual curiosity and recognized their accomplishments. Now, with all the demands on their time and especially their expertise, you and your team are responsible for finding compelling ways to keep them meaningfully involved. And hopefully, through this involvement, your institution will become or continue to be among one of the top 3 to 4 institutions that they support in significant ways over the course of their lifetime. But to do so, they must see your organization as one of the most effective and most successful programs worthy of their time and trust. And all that matters really is how you are regarded by them, period. As in any good relationship, this requires introspection on your part and taking time to really see them, both individually and collectively, in a different light. In some cases, you've lived with these folks for a while. How well, though, do you know them today? Has your interaction and your program changed along with them? As society changes, people change. And one of my memories from the time that I spent in higher education is that we often placed our graduates, with whom we spent a great deal of time, in the time in which they graduated from the institution, and kept trying to bring those memories back rather than creating new memories. What we have going for us today, our greatest tool, is the way in which new sociological and psychological research and trend setting are pushed out by various forms of social media almost in real time, allowing us to receive information about what we are now calling mindset. Learning about millennials was my first wake-up call to this real-time life data. As one of my colleagues, an actual millennial, remarked, it's like they're watching me. So it's not surprising to me that Joseph Campbell's exploration of the power of myth has resurfaced and become a popular reference in attempting to explain the tribal nature of humans. Campbell helped those of us in the 60s find our bliss, and not surprisingly, his wisdom has resurfaced during a time when Americans especially are wanting to find a sense of home. But I would say it's just not Americans who are wanting to find a sense of home. Now more than ever, your organization is being viewed as home by those closest to you and by those searching. Campbell calls it tribe. If you go to the Austin South by Southwest, they call it community. It is about a place of belonging. Doesn't matter where that place is, it's the feeling of place, where one can feel comfortable, where one feels welcomed, and a part of something larger, a part of something meaningful. It can be alma mater, It can be church. It can be service organization. It can be an athletic association. It is essential more than ever that you provide your alumni and members with a place where they feel they belong. This is a really good time. It's a perfect time to amp up their connectedness to your institution. I believe travel can be a way to accomplish this in an even more relevant and meaningful way. So think about that, that travel could be that very fulcrum to get somebody feeling a greater sense of belonging. One of the tenets in the shifting landscape of behavior is that our donors are not looking at a successful trip in a purely transactional way. Their time is their currency, and how well their time is used determines the value. It's not about money. It's about what is happening within that period of time they're with you. And so just to be able to compartmentalize this idea of mindset, I would choose four words for us to consider as you're thinking about creating that sense of belonging and reinforcing that sense of home. The first word is safety. I count on you to keep me safe in the traditional ways they may be thinking, but I am willing to take a calculated risk. How far can you take me? They trust you, and yet they want that experience. They want that thrill. How far can you take them and make them feel safe? Selection, I think, has become even more important. More and more, they are looking for flexibility within structure. They want to do some exploration on their own or simply have more breathing time. Have you encountered this with our very tight structured travel programs? It's our number one feedback. Give us a little more space. And remember, they have researched more than any other group in our time of travel. They have associations in these places they're going. They have their own thing that they want to see. Build in that breathing time. Give them time to explore. Loosen up the schedule, but also provide time for co-creation. Many of these people have a lot that they could share if you just ask. And particularly, it doesn't have to be everyone. Mass customization is a tough thing, I know. But if you can take a few people and say, I know you're familiar with this area, help us. What would you like to see? How could you inform our decisions about where to eat or what to do or where to go? It makes a difference. We're taking a lot more time with that part of what we're calling co-creation. And while they appreciate the now overused term, and I know being in the museum how overused it is, the curated experience, they really want freedom within that structure to experiment, to stretch their own creative and intellectual muscle. So how well you can allow that to happen will, I think, create that sense of belonging and ownership. It's not about going on a trip. It's about really how they're perceiving their use of time and their involvement. And one that you might not think about, but has actually become more and more relevant just within our organization over the last couple of years, is service. And I had never really thought about service and the importance of that to the traveler. Mission is important to you. It's important to all of us related to our institution. It keeps us focused and anchored. But our donors are more interested now in the humanity of the organization. They're interested in the people that make up the organization, the people you serve. They're interested in impact. They're interested in relevancy. They will not, or maybe I should put it in the affirmative, they expect you to manage the mission, but they want to drill down a little further. They want to answer the question, in service to what? It is important that you fill in the blank or at least acknowledge that they have a need to answer this question. I am giving you my support in service to fill in the blank. I am participating in this program in service to what? We are just not going somewhere. Why are we going there? And why is it meaningful to me? I must tell you, it was not obvious to us, but it means something to every one of our major donors. They want to know how we are connecting to them in service to what. It can range from personal growth and development to being useful. But it has stretched us, and I will tell you, when we can answer that proactively, or when we can become a part of their exploration of in service to what, it makes for far more meaningful engagement. And the last one is surprise. They want access to things they cannot get on their own or don't have the time to pursue independently. And you do this beautifully. The schedule doesn't need to have a lot of hooks to keep someone interested, but one or two blow your mind or aha moments that are totally unexpected can do it, because you are the magician. They don't know how you did it, but they are glad that they were able to be a part of it. So we kind of call that our surprise. What is it that we're going to do that will just surprise and delight them? We also spend time at the end of every meeting around a dinner table at some point asking, what was your most memorable occasion? And it's funny, we usually think that they're going to talk about a place they saw or a program that they encountered, but usually it's about how they felt, how something that happened made them feel or think in a different way. So the more during the trip you can provide opportunities for them to talk about those things that maybe were a surprise to them, but you would never think about it as that big moment, makes a difference, and it will inform the rest of your planning. The good news about changing mindset, or the changing mindset, we don't change mindsets, we understand them, is that you are not behind. After all, you are already in the relationship business. You can actually get ahead of this, because it's not about big change. It's all about awareness and the refinement of your program, being willing to evaluate beyond the superficial, read the trends, and ask the hard questions. The other good news is that people will appreciate being asked and offer some really great insight. As a focus group of one that not only sends out a lot of information in my work, but also receives as much, I encourage you to examine what you are doing, the narrative of your letters and requests, the way you design your materials, as well as the way you structure your personal visits, and see if it conveys a sense of connection. Many times we default to the boilerplate and aren't even aware of the tone or the use of pronouns and approaches that are fresh and sound as though they were written specifically for the reader. So I do think where I see where we can improve the most are in the way in which we, the ways in which we communicate personally to our travelers. I do think that many times I am receiving more and more personal thank yous that aren't really that personal in their thank you. And I believe and I know how valuable time is when you're working under deadlines and when you're also very short-staffed. I appreciate all of that. But I do encourage you, if there's any kind of takeaway, is to sit down and evaluate your materials through the lens of that idea of connecting your people. Does it feel like you're a place where they belong? Does it feel like you are a place called home? There is a lot to accomplish and there's much to do, and you have the best practices, really. I know your industry. You have best practices. More than that, you have the discipline and the motivation to succeed. It's not presumptuous to declare that I know you. I really do. I know what makes you tick, and I know what makes you succeed. You care deeply about your organization moving forward. the level of dedication in this room alone and the genuine excitement that I saw last night and that I felt even in the airport as I was coming here is all about what you do. You love what you do, and your energy is off the charts. Yes, it's serious work in a way, but we have to have fun. We have to lighten up, because when I say people are looking for home, that's what they're looking for. They're looking for the confidence that we provide. They're looking for a certain attitude and energy, and they want to have a good time. Your work, you work for a purposeful, mission-driven organization, and each of your locations is in a beautiful part of the world. Your alumni and your members are devoted and loyal. Your colleagues, for the most part, are really stand-up people who share your passion. All in all, you've got a pretty good gig, don't you? And of all the things I've mentioned that our alumni and members are looking for, don't underestimate the power of you. In this equation, you are one of the core reasons that they are connected to your organization. They see the possibility in the future. And while it is purely anecdotal based on 30 years of development experience, I can assure you that what most alumni and members remember are the good times and the fun. So it's your job to have a good time doing your work, to enjoy your colleagues, to bask in the beauty and meaning of your work, and then relate it all in a compelling yet engaging way to the alumni and members through your killer graphics, your design work, your inspired and thoughtful words, your unique programs, and your personal visits. It is essential to convey the message that their organization is academically competitive, a place where teaching and learning thrives, research is relevant, and service is meaningful, day in and day out. That is the core of who you are. And no matter how much the world and people change around you, this remains constant. But balance that with the fact that it is a place where they belong, where they can return, where they feel valued, and where they can be relevant. In doing so, they will see the value and relevancy in their association, and you and your program will be the richer for it. Thank you.
Thank you, Sandy, for your inspiring and actionable words. There are more amazing opportunities to continue the discussion with Sandy. Travel planners, immediately after this session, can join Sandy for an open Q&A in the Travel Planner Forum. Tomorrow afternoon from 1:30 to 2:30, Sandy will partake in a panel discussion open to all attendees. And there are still times open to have a one-on-one session with Sandy between 5 and 6 p.m. tomorrow, and you can sign up at the registration desk. Once again, I'd like to thank the Israel Ministry of Tourism for the wonderful keynote presentations that you experience in this conference are only possible because of sponsors like them. Please visit them at their booth, number 10, in the International Bazaar. And at this point, travel planners, you're headed upstairs for the Travel Planner Forum. It's on the mezzanine level, which is just one level up. You can get there by the stairs in the lobby, which I'd recommend, or by the elevators. And for destinations, operators, and suppliers, we have connects in the International Bazaar. Thank you very much.